Good evening, and welcome to the Flypaper Dungeon. And I am your host, Johnny Zombie. With me is my co-pilot, Dylan. And tonight we're going to do something a little different. This is not a horror movie. It's not a science fiction movie.
You have to say the line.
Nee! No. What?
No,
what line?
And now for something completely different.
Yes. As you may know, I am a huge Monty Python fan, and I had the rare opportunity of seeing Terry Jones live at the Castro Theater in San Francisco for the anniversary of The Holy Grail, where he presented it and did a Q&A with the audience, and then he presented Life of Brian. And he talked about his career with Monty Python and the making of this film. Well, there you go, I kind of gave it away. We're watching Monty Python and The Holy Grail, the funniest film ever made, Monty Python's all-time greatest film, really, and the work that they are best known for outside of their TV series, The Flying Circus. So this is a movie that I've seen many, 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 many times. So many times that I can quote the dialogue verbatim, almost. It's been a while since Dylan has seen it, and he'd asked if I could put it on, and so we are going to watch it. And I just couldn't resist the thought of doing an audio commentary to it, so we're going to do that. So, for those of you at home, sync up your DVDs. I'm going to give you a 5-second warning, and on my mark, you shall start your DVDs. The version that I am playing with is the Special Edition DVD, and this is from... Well, the film was made in 1974, but this version is from 2001. And I see that, surprisingly enough, this was rated PG when it was first released. I'd forgotten about that. Big bollocks. Especially the talk about the oral sex, that's not going to get you a PG today. And the spanking! So, without any further ado, on my mark, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Come on. Wake up, come on. Media player, wake up.
Mark's a son of a bitch.
Exactly. Ah, there we go. So, as I was about to say, this is not science fiction, this is not horror, but it is fantasy in a way, because it's Arthurian. And it is comedy, so without further ado, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, mark.
Week?
Yes, that is, I believe, Swedish for with.
Yes. Also week?
Yes, in fact, I might actually grab the second microphone and plug it in so we should both have them.
Also week?
Yes. You know what, that wouldn't be such a bad idea, actually.
We not try a holiday in Sweden this year.
Yes, yes. It was Michael Palin's idea, actually, to put these Swedish subtitles up.
Until the person responsible for them was sacked, of course.
Yes, most definitely. Yeah, the whole purpose behind it was they didn't have money for a really spectacular credit sequence, which is what they originally wanted to do, so instead Palin came up with the idea of doing these wacky subtitles.
So, no money for a visually stunning thing. Instead, they do a gag.
Yep. And yes, the letter from Richard M. Nixon. Songs by Neil Innes. Neil Innes is famous for...
A moose once bit my sister.
Yeah, he's famous for that too. But for composing a lot of Python's music. And the theme song that dun 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 is actually public domain music from DeWolf's music library. Innes had written a great score for the film, but they ran out of money, so they had to use public domain music.
Mind you, moose guides can be pretty nasty.
And we're at the part now where the... We apologize again for the fault in the subtitles. Those responsible for sacking the people who have been sacked have just been sacked. The part where the titles keep messing up.
Moose trained by you, Hermiskin's brother, brother, brother. Hermiskin's brother, brother, brother. Something like that.
Moose costumes by Ziggy Churchill. And special moose effects by Olaf Blatt.
Moose trying to mix concrete and send complicated insurance forms by Jürgen Wig.
Yeah, mysterious mooses.
This is nose wiped by Bjorn, Irken Storm and Slaughter Rocker.
Entler care by Leif Thatcher, sister of Margaret.
I don't know if that's Margaret Thatcher's sister, I just made that up.
Directors of this firm hired to continue the credits after the other people have been sacked wish to be known that they have just been sacked. The credits have been completed in an entirely different style, a great expense, and I miss the bit.
A great expense and entirely different this time.
John Goldstone and Raf the Wonder Llama!
Mark for starter.
76,000 battery llamas.
6 Venezuelan red llamas.
And 30 Johns and 30 Gilliam.
Yeah, it's a little epileptic.
Sorry. For those of you who are epileptic and offended, why the hell are you on the internet where there are flashing bright lights?
Sit back and watch the blinking lights.
Listen to some Joy Division. Ooh, that was tasteless. Sorry. I love Joy Division, too. I shouldn't have said that. And here we see a man tied to a Catherine wheel, so named because that was the implement used to torture St. Catherine to death.
I wonder if St. Andrew's implement makes an appearance. Maybe this movie's not kinky enough for it.
No. Castle Anthrax, it could have, but it doesn't. And here we go. Graham Chapman as King Arthur, and Terry Gilliam as Patsy. And that castle is also the French Taunter castle. It's the same castle, shot from different angles, because Python couldn't secure permission to shoot in multiple castles. So Terry Jones just used the same castle over and over again.
I noticed that bit in the credits that it was filmed. Said it was filmed entirely on location in Scotland and around whatever this castle was. Its name I missed.
Dune Castle. It's Dune Castle, spelled D-O-O-N-E.
Like dare.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, and the land they were just crossing, it was actually Terry Jones' backyard. They just used a fog machine to block out the traffic, because there was a highway that ran behind his backyard. Or motorway, as they say in Britain. And here's the discussion about the coconuts.
I homage this doing a movement bit in a acting class once. I made my entrance by buying a coconut, cracking it in half, and then entering underneath the seats of the little studio theater by
coconuts migrate. Swallow carrying a coconut
by the husk
or strand of creeper.
I remember the first time I saw this, I was 12 years old, and I was laughing so hard I couldn't breathe. I had to pause the tape. That's how long ago it was a VHS cassette, and I had to pause it. I just could not breathe, my face was all red, and I was just on the floor gasping for air.
African swallow?
It almost sounds like a porno theme, African Swallow.
Oh. Yeah, I probably don't want to know what goes into that one. Of course, that was a line in The Good Shepherd. The girl was woman was referred to as a Russian swallow. Mm-hmm. A double agent, or yeah. Just a spy.
Yeah. I wish Anna Chapman would be a Russian swallow. She's such a naughty little girl.
Bring out your dead.
Bring out your dead.
In the video game, which I also have for this, there is a, every time you click on Eric Idle during the sequence, he says a different phrase. He says, bring out your dead, clean out your shed, eat here instead, be nice to Fred. And this is an actual Welsh village. They went and they put mud and, according to Terry Gilliam, pig shit all over the streets. And they put thatching on the roofs to cover the roof tiles. And they made it look like a plague village.
Just a little bit of set dressing makes all the difference.
Oh yeah, yeah. 20th century Wales looked like medieval Wales, which, it's my understanding, it's not much of a difference. But anyways, no offense to our Welsh listeners. Oh, and in the background, over at John Cleves, you can see a cat getting bashed against the wall. I'll explain that later.
Could be a chicken being bashed against the wall.
Oh, no, it's a cat. Yeah, and in fact...
The chicken is the other gag that they like to do.
Oh, yeah. The chicken, the knight with the chicken that would whack people. And now this is the part where John Cleese has the man who's not quite dead yet.
He won't be long.
You know, if you have a relative you don't want, there's got to be an easier way to get rid of them. Oh, yeah. Eric Idle just whacked him on the head with the baton. Oh, one of my favorite lines here.
Must
be a king.
Why? Because he's not all covered in shit.
He's the only one who's got shit over him. And we can see in the background the man on the Catherine wheel again. He just keeps popping up in random places. In the video game, if you click on him, he says, "I keep having these strange dreams of people having conversations through wires on poles."
Think he's a dummy.
In this scene, he was. At first, he wasn't. And here is Michael Palin as the political peasant, Dennis.
Oh, yes.
He's not old. He's 37, which in the medieval era was old. Now, the funny thing about this is that this is leading up to a scene where Mike Palin had to eat mud. Terry Jones made him eat mud, and they wound up chopping the scene out. And I don't think it's even in the special edition, but they had the... specially prepared this mud so Palin wouldn't get sick from it, and yeah, he wanted to be eating the mud.
And they didn't even use the bit.
No, I have not even found it on the special edition. There's not even deleted scenes.
Special note to directors, don't do that shit to your actors.
I try my best not to, but in one short film I did make out with the lead actress. Only because I couldn't find a lead actor. It was a really, really hard day of shooting, but that's another story.
Oh, yeah. Real difficult.
Yeah. She was a redhead, too, so it made it easy. We all know my fetish. Here they are talking about political theory in the Middle Ages, feudalism versus a democracy.
I guess it would have been kind of a cliche if Dylan McConnell said, homage this with in Bite Me.
I don't think it's a cliche, though, because in essence she kind of does with the whole French Revolution period, and,
well, perhaps, but, you know, everyone on the internet knows Monty Python.
Yeah, true. And now Arthur is ordering them to shut the hell up about politics. You don't vote for kings, you know. Clad in the purest samite. Some of the best dialogue ever is in the scene. Yes, the water has bosoms, it has boobs.
No basis for a system of government.
Yep. That's a Commonwealth government, actually. My home state's a Commonwealth. And my state, much like Britain, was founded by a watery tart in a lake distributing a sword to William Penn. Shut up. Oh, here it comes. Here it comes. We see the violence inherent in the system. Here it comes.
Help. Help, help. I'm being repressed. I'm being repressed. Help, help. Being repressed.
That should be Amnesty International's theme. Help, help. I'm being repressed. And here it is, the fight scene with the Black Knight. And I'm just going to throw in a little bit of trivia and then throw the microphone over to Dylan because he's been studying stage combat for a long time. The Green Knight is being played by Michael Palin. And both Palin and Cleese had to take fencing lessons for this scene. They had never done swordplay before. So they're wearing actual armor and actually fighting each other, too. They're no stuntmen. They're really fucking each other up.
My maitre d'armes points out that this battle between the Black Knight and the Green Knight is utterly necessary for the comic premise that then follows with the Black Knight's fight with Arthur. Oh yeah, good stuff. Oh, yeah, these are all SAFD. No. Oh! Right in the, what's the yin yang? There we go. That's what they say. Oh! And the epic flail.
Yep, a flail, not a mace. Mace is different.
Yeah, good comic fight. And an axe! Let's get everything in there. Oh, very nice.
I'm just going to jump in here. That stage blood in Britain is called Kensington Gore. And due to censorship reasons, they could not have it blood red. It had to be an orange color. And you see this later in the Hammer horror films as well.
Oh, that explains it.
Yeah.
What it looked like and the creeping flesh and the other ones that I've seen recently.
Yeah. Yeah. All the Hammer films, it's orange.
Black Knight makes no response. It wasn't a bad Lego version of this fight that I saw, but the Legos just can't get the same range of motion that other toys, much less the human body, can get. So I couldn't tell where each target was for each attack.
Yeah, it's difficult to articulate Lego. I've tried it in stop motion. It's a bitch. Now, if you look very closely into the Black Knight's helmet, you can see Cleese's eyes and you can see his face.
Yep, could see his mouth. How tall is John Cleese? He's 6'4", at least, isn't he?
I believe so, yeah. Because I know Douglas Adams was 6'2". I think Cleese is either a 6'2 or 6'4". Oh, here we go. Swords are drawn.
Cut to left hip, cut to head, parry five, bind down, swipe. Oh, I don't know why. That one really made no sense. Thrust, swipe across head. Diagonal swipe, cut to right hip, it looked like. Oh, pommel attack. Cut to head, parry five, and let's see, glissade. Ooh, hanging parry five. Oh, and there we go. Cut to left shoulder.
And we got more Kensington Gore. We got a mild geyser here. Tis but to scratch your arms off.
Splurt. Splurt. Cut to right shoulder. Yep, another cut to right shoulder. Cut to left shoulder, and a thrust. And there we go, another cut to the right shoulder. Splurt. Splurt. Splurt.
And some more Kensington Gore. And we got Arthur getting kicked while he's praying.
A little bit of blasphemy there for good measure.
Yeah, that's never happened to me in church. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have. Just a flesh wound. Chicken! Chicken!
My mom loves this part. This is her favorite part in the movie.
Cut to right hip. Come here!
Do bleed on me. I'm invincible! You're a loony. Knights always triumphed. How about you? Come on, then. Frunk.
Work for paraplegics. Although it was actually John Cleese buried to his waist, wasn't it?
No, it was actually a man who had one leg. A man who had one leg and his arms had been amputated. And they had actually dug a hole for his one leg and buried him up to his hip. That's some cruel shit. Whack! And that is actually Neil Innes as the head monk, the songwriter. He also plays Sir Robin's head minstrel, the one who sings, Sir Robin ran away. And this is the same Welsh village that the plague scenes were shot in. Now, medieval monks used to actually do this because they believed if they punished themselves through self-flagellation or headbanging, literally, that they would atone for the sins of mankind and alleviate the plague.
And it was a bit I remember from The Name of the Rose, too. I think the albino was flogging himself out and then got spotted. Oh, yeah.
Yes, the swallow and the coconut, yeah.
I'm sure that was a dove.
Probably.
It was awfully white.
Yeah. Oh, we also see that in Da Vinci Code. Yeah. We see Paul Bettany flogging himself. And here we have the witch trial sequence. And the witch is played by John Cleese's wife at the time, Connie Booth, who would co-star with him on Fawlty Towers.
Wasn't her that had the "but it's my only line" bit, was it?
No, it was Carol Cleveland. That was Zoot. And she has a carrot for a nose, a funnel for a hat.
Unless it's a parsnip.
Could be. No, did you do this? No. They're all like little schoolboys. They've just done a prank on the girl in the class, and they don't want to admit to it.
Love that Fu Manchu mustache, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was gonna ask Terry Jones if that was real, but I didn't get the chance to ask him. And they're gonna go, burn her anyway, burn her. They're all enthusiastic. But Bedivere's not hearing any of it. He's gotta tell if she's a witch.
A little Welsh fried pagan. WPG, WFG. No, WFP, there we go.
Welsh fried pagan. How do you like your Wiccan extra crispy or original recipe? I apologize to all the women I know in San Francisco, because the majority of them are Wiccans and pagans and so on. They're lovely people. And now, they've been asked, why do witches burn? And they purposefully let this out longer than... Oh, Eric Idle bites his sigh, because John Cleese was holding off on his timing. Purposefully, A, to mess with him, and B, to drag out the comedic effect. Yeah. Can't build a bridge out of her, because you can make them out of stone. Does wood sink in water? Nope.
It floats.
Throw her into the pond, which is what they used to do. What also floats in water?
Bread.
Apples. Very small rocks.
Sodom. Great gravy. Churches. Lead.
And King Arthur says it. A duck. Exactly. Logically, she weighs the same as a duck. She's made of wood.
Therefore, a witch.
I think that time it was a little too fast. I think they could have slowed it down a bit. But... Now, if you look very closely, you'll see that Terry Jones is not wearing real chainmail. It was caught, like a knitted fabric, like a knitted cotton that was impregnated with tinsel to make it look all silvery and glittery, material that was prevalent back in the 70s. And so they knitted him a suit of armor, literally.
Well, considering how difficult the stuff is, more, maybe not difficult, but just tedious to make, yet she weighs, a witch.
Famous line, it's a fair cop, yeah. Connie Booth is quite an attractive woman, too. She's adorable. Medieval science. The Round Table. My liege, I would be honored. And Terry Jones had to keep lifting the face guard because it was difficult for him to talk with the guard over his mouth.
So, therefore, it just becomes a running gag.
Yeah. And this is the book of the film. And we see, I believe that was Connie Booth's hand. There's Michael Palin. There's Eric Idle, Sir Robin. And the photographs here are production stills taken from the film. Presley wet himself at the Battle of Badon Hill. Sir not appearing in this film. That baby is Tommy Palin, Michael Palin's little boy.
What's Tommy Palin doing these days? Is he an actor?
I'm not sure. I'd have to research that, but he was on his dad's show, Around the World in 80 Days, to wish his dad bon voyage. Oh, sheep's bladders may be used to detect earthquakes. That would come in handy in San Francisco, actually.
No kidding. Of course, I think we might be a little short on sheep in the Bay Area.
Oh no, the people who voted for Prop 8, they're the sheep. Yeah, we got plenty of those people, unfortunately. Knights of the Round Table, we dance when we're able. Do routines and footwork, scenes and footwork, and back able. Hamlet, weed, ham and jam and spam a lot. Da 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 Ooh, I just noticed something I'd never noticed before. The plate with the Granny Smith apples on it that was just kicked by the knights, and you see it again when the knights are singing. Yeah. The significance behind that is Granny Smith apple is the logo for Apple Records, the Beatles record label. George Harrison was one of the producers. He fronted money for this film, and he also produced Life of Brian as well. And Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd also fronted the money for this film as well.
Wow. Didn't know that.
Yeah. They were all fans of Python, and they wanted Python to make a movie, so they fronted the budget for this film.
Did they also front for Life of Brian and Meaning of Life and the other ones?
That was George Harrison, through his company Handmade Films. Yeah, and Harrison has a cameo in Life of Brian as well.
Oh, he got his face guard to prop open for just a bit.
Yeah, it kept falling on his face. He said it was a real bitch to wear. Now, that was real armor, his helmet, but the rest of him was all fake. The rest of it was all fake.
Oh, God speaks to you.
Yep. And according to Terry Gilliam, who does all the animations for Python, as you know, this was a picture of a cricket player that he had cut out from an old photograph, and they just stuck a crown on him, a generic-looking crown.
A little bit of Photoshop, and you make a cricket player god.
Yep, yep. They did it all by hand, man. No Photoshop back in them days. And they avert their eyes because the belief is you could not look into God because the light of God is so brilliant that it would burn out your eyes. Which explains why people would go blind looking at the sun when they were worshipping it.
Blinded by the light.
And now we see the Holy Grail. And the film doesn't explain what the Holy Grail is, but as you all know from the legend, the Grail is the chalice Christ drank from at the Last Supper and was believed to have collected his blood at the time of his crucifixion.
Isn't that the riddle from the story of the Grail, too? That's you gain it by asking the question, what is the Grail? Maybe I'm remembering that wrong, but something like that.
Don't think so. I remember in the film Excalibur, Arthur has to ask who am I by God, essentially, and basically he has to submit to God and admit that God is bigger than him and admit that he is his lord and king in order to attain the Grail. In other words, he had to humble himself. And that's after he is stripped of his armor, but that's another story. That's another film entirely. Quite possibly the best adaptation of King Arthur outside of this.
I gotta read more Arthur. One of my brothers borrowed from the library this book that was a compilation and apparently tried to stitch them all together. I don't think, you know, which is sometimes done with Conan, but I don't think it works for Arthur because the stories, it's okay if they're disparate because they come from so many different times and so many different topics that they touch. I mean, you know, the Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, where does that fit in with compared to Arthur's death?
Yeah. Now, there was a king Arthur, essentially, there was, but he was an early Britonic ruler who won a decisive victory over the Normans. And I would have to consult the exact dates, but basically he was a tribal leader, a Celtic tribal leader, who beat up some Normans and became a legend.
So the King Arthur film with Clive Owen maybe went back a little bit towards that, but I doubt that it was really wasn't that close of a digging back to the real germ of truth that the legends have been built around.
Right, I've seen that movie many times. It's actually a good movie. I enjoyed it. I think it's a really good film. But yeah, it goes back to Roman Britain, and so it takes that approach. So a little bit further, but not bad. You know. It was a good effort. We have John Cleese as the French taunter at the Castle Loimbard. And
what are the French doing in England? Conquering, of course.
That's what William the Conqueror did when he came over in Normandy and brought my relatives with him. Boil your bottoms! I blow my nose at you, you animal food trough wiper!
Silly niggets!
Which is just knights mispronounced. And
maybe more properly pronounced if you're going back to Old English instead of the Norman influences on Middle and Modern English.
No, that's true. In fact, the word knight comes from French, meaning servant.
And then, so chevalier's got a different connotation.
Well, chevalier means horseman, if I'm not mistaken. Cheval, horse, yeah. And now we see that there is John Cleese standing there, has Sir Lancelot. But there he is up on the parapet, making fun of himself.
Yeah, the poor python guys talk to themselves a lot.
I talk to myself a lot, but I don't wear knight's armor when I do it. Maybe I should. That says, fetche la vache, which means get the cow in French. Oh, here we go. Jesus Christ! And yes, that is a real dead cow that had been taxidermied.
Nice.
Bessie!
Now, the sick thing about this is, back in the day, they really did throw dead animals over the parapets to make people sick, to spread contagion.
Yeah. Besiegers would do that, throw corpses and dead animals into them to spread the plague inside the castle they were trying to besiege.
In the Ridley Scott film, Kingdom of Heaven, there's a scene where Orlando Bloom is defending the city of Jerusalem. And there are all these dead bodies, these corpses, and he burns them in a big plague pit because, well, not a plague pit, but in a big pit, because it was spread contagion otherwise. And now the French taunter is hearing the sounds of saws. And I think we hear a chainsaw in a little bit, if I remember correctly. Because they're building the Trojan rabbit.
Great expressions from Cleese, is the Frenchman.
There we go, a cat noise. And he's genuinely confused. He's flustered as hell.
Oh, yeah, there we go. Jackhammer. Yeah. Oh, and a circular saw, it sounded like.
Yeah. Yeah, there we go. Circular saw. Some hammering. Some nails. And we can hear the squeaky, squeaky wheels.
So instead of Greeks bearing gifts, what do we have here? Wodes bearing gifts?
Yes, beware of strange Celts bearing gifts. Yeah. Well, at this point, it would be Christian Britain, but there'd be enough pagans around.
Who are knights bearing gifts?
Yeah. Beware of knights in white satin, no matter what, but if they're bearing gifts, especially. But
bearing gifts, never reaching the end. Letters they've written, never meaning to send.
And here we go, there's Terry Jones at the door. Speaking totally in French and then finally in English, let's go.
We would need Bunny here to translate, I guess.
Yes, we would need Bunny to translate the bunny scene. I don't speak a word of French, and I wish I did. And the Trojan rabbit is actually being pulled by a winch, although you can't see it. It was so goddamn heavy they couldn't push it in.
Too bad it wasn't being pulled by a wench.
Maybe it was. Large wench. Lancelot, Galahad, and I leap out of the rabbit.
Totally alarmed.
Who leaps out? And here we see it, the look on Chapman's face. Facepalm.
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 Almost another facepalm. Yeah. Robin wanted to, it looked like.
Large wooden badger, and then whack! And he walked into that, too. He deserved it.
Run away!
And gone! It fell right on Neil Innes. He hits himself in the head in this movie. He has a fucking rabbit fall on him. A big wooden Trojan rabbit. And a famous historian.
That's right. He just gets his... Wait for it.
Wait for it.
Panic. Pulling out. That's what she
zoom
said.
Zoom out. And... Oh, yes! Great arterial spray from the neck, Kensington Gore classic.
Okay, they just cut his throat. They didn't take his head off then.
No, this is a PG film, remember?
Oh, that's right. It's all covered in shite.
Still, that is a great throat slash. Perfect. And here's a dirty secret. That's still. That scene of that the mountains there, it's still. You can see it now on the DVD. You can see the grains in the photo. And there's Neil Innes singing the song.
Could have sworn he looked different in the previous scene. He didn't have the mustache and his hair was shorter.
Yeah, his head was covered by the cowl. By the chainmail cowl.
Or the coif.
Yeah. That makes his hair look shorter.
And of course his device on his shield and his surcoat is the chicken.
Yep. And of course we see the road signs, beware. We saw Camelot, we see beware, beware. And then we see the certain death signs coming up.
1 mile away.
And right at the part about his penis, he gets cut off, no offense. Dead people only, there's that sign.
Quite the entourage he has. Quite the entourage he has.
Yeah, we see the three knights impaled on the giant lance. Oh, and we also saw Dennis, the political peasant, and his mom show up again. Very, very briefly, just walk through the scene.
It's the three-headed knight.
Fight and shut up. Nothing really. Just to him. Just passing through. Passing through. Afraid not. You're a knight of the round table.
Shall I? I don't think so. Oh, I think. Oh, shut up. This could also... They could have homaged the Hobbit here, maybe. The scene with the three trolls.
Yeah, that is correct. It's been years since I've read The Hobbit. I completely forgot about that.
Remember that bit after there's the exchange that they're having, the argument, I think even before the dwarves pop up, and Tolkien makes the note that, yes, all trolls talk this unpleasantly. Even the ones that only have just one head.
Hey, buggered off. And for those of you that aren't British or familiar with the slang, to bugger means to sodomize someone. And if you don't know what sodomy is, you're listening to the wrong podcast. Go and look it up. I am not explaining to you.
Google with care.
Yeah, just Wikipedia it. Don't even bother Googling because you don't know what's going to pop up. If you're on Wikipedia, you have a chance of avoiding anything that may traumatize you.
Or get you a reprimand from work.
Yeah. It's not safe for work. And here we go with the Latin chant again.
Nice illuminated manuscript, though.
Yeah, and this is all animation from Terry Gilliam, but this is from photocopies of real manuscripts, actually. But it's all his animation. Yep, and we got some animated ass. Some illuminated ass. Now, in some prayer books and chat books, there would be erotic illustrations hidden in among the Psalms and so on.
Because... monks are cleverer than you give them credit for.
Oh, yes. In fact, the phrase fuck first appears in the 1200s. It's from an English poem that says that the monks fuck the wives of Ely. Ely was a nearby town outside of Cambridge, and it was a criticism of monks who were carnally inclined. Monks weren't always trapped in their cells. They would sometimes go out and get it on, you know?
Well, we get Benedictine from them anyway, and other kinds of liquors, so yeah. other kinds of rubber buns and liquor.
And we're at Castle Anthrax, the happiest place in Britain, and the grail-shaped beacon has just beckoned Sir Galahad the Chaste, remember, to the door, and it is really raining. This is not fake rain.
If I'm remembering the legend correctly, one of the denizens of the castle where the grail was hidden got Galahad by seducing Lancelot. Needed a pure knight, I think. Something like that. And because Lancelot was infatuated with Queen Guinevere, he wasn't willing to marry her himself. Something like that.
Yeah, that does sound so familiar. And here is Carol Cleveland as Zoot. She was one of the only regular females on Monty Python's Flying Circus. And she features prominently in their films as well. Midget crow's feet. the name of these two very attractive young women, but they gave them the most god-awful names ever.
Well, I guess Zoot isn't particularly sexy either. Well, it's been made sexy now.
Yeah. Zoot Suit, that's what I thought of, you know. So. Zoot, just Zoot. God's name, show me the Grail.
Show me the Grail!
Reminds me in Excalibur, what is it, Helen Mirren says, show me the dragon. She says it to Merlin. Morgana, that was Helen Mirren's character. Arthur's evil half-sister.
Helen Mirren is Morgana. Well, it's been years since I've seen that film, so...
Oh, yeah. Cut off the castle, no one to protect us. Lonely life. Bathing, dressing, undressing, knitting exciting underwear.
Oh, yes, exciting first millennium AD underwear.
Yep. I've got to see the dock. And we have Galahad in bed here. If only all doctors could be that attractive, seriously.
Well, hey, considering they've only had 6 months of training.
Oh, it'd be even less back then. Nostradamus was actually a doctor. He was a physician, which is kind of scary, having a fortune teller for a doctor. But he was able to cure the plague quite successfully using rose lozenges, pills made from rose petals.
So I wonder if that's an instance of a doctor having a hobby.
Like a
proctologist who's also a ventriloquist, as Robin Williams said.
Yep. Yep. Well, he would have been taught herbal medicine, holistic medicine back then, which people practice today. And now he's in the bathing room. And yep, those women really are wearing camisoles and no underwear underneath. And yep, they really are wet.
Diaphanous nightgowns for the win.
Fuck yes. All these beautiful, beautiful girls all lined up. And Galahad doesn't know what the hell to do, because he's taken a vow of chastity. Reminds me of what St. Augustine once said, Lord, give me chastity, just not yet.
Very nice. He seeks the Grail, the shield of his chastity.
And, yep, wicked bad naughty Zoot. She's got a Grail-shaped beacon. And this is the inside of Dune Castle, the castle that was being used by the French daughters in that scene. Bad, naughty, evil Zoot. She's bad, bad, bad. Must pay the penalty. And this is a bonus scene coming up.
I don't know if I've seen the bridge. Oh. String of pussy jokes. Get on with it!
I am enjoying this scene. Get on. Oh, when God tells you to get on with it, you gotta get on with it, Zoot. Yeah? Wicked, wicked Zoot. She must pay the penalty. Oh, yes.
You must tie her down on the bed and spank her.
And spank and spank and spank. Spank her well. And after you've spanked her comes, do with her as you like. And then?
Spank me.
Spank. And me. And me.
And me.
And me.
Oh, the good spanking.
Yes. Kinky Python.
Oral sex.
Why doesn't this ever happen to me? Why don't I ever meet this many kinky women, you know, that are willing to let me spank them and do, you know, with them?
Well, I guess you need to hang out with the Python troop more often.
Yeah. Maybe I should just go to Citadel. You know, I've not been there yet. It's only $10 for a year-long membership.
I can handle them.
Single-handedly, we have Sir Lancelot leading Sir Galahad out. Only 150. Galahad can handle them.
Oh, despair. Oh, diaphanous nightgowns on attractive women. Oh, nipples.
You were in great peril. I don't think I was. Let me go back in there and face them. No? Too perilous. Bet you're gay. No, I'm not.
From almost certain temptation.
Then we got the monkey hand. Turn on the pages. Big gorilla hand. Not more than a swallow's flight away. Scene 24. And this part was shot in Scotland. At a ruined cottage. So.
Get on with it!
And that was added as well. That's more bonus footage. This edition of the DVD has about 17 seconds worth of bonus footage.
Consulting the fortune teller.
And now in this scene we have Terry Gilliam as the old man who's also the bridge keeper. We have Terry Jones as Sir Bedivere, so we have both directors in the same scene together having a conversation with each other.
That's what happens when your troop's that small.
And that talented.
And that talented.
I agree. And that is just brilliant makeup on Terry Gilliam. It's almost reminiscent of Lon Chaney Sr.'s makeup when he played Quasimodo.
Yeah, love that eye.
That was a glass contact lens he had to keep in there. It was painful as hell. Reminds me of the contact lenses Christopher Lee had to use when he played Dracula. When his eyes were bloodshot, they were glass. They were not soft contacts.
Ouch. I don't even wear contacts, but yeah, I can imagine.
I do, and I barely ever feel them. And we're coming up to the Knights Who Say Knee.
Knights Who Say Knee, stalking Arthur Bedivere. Yep.
Knights Who Say Knee and Break Twigs.
Knights in black sackcloth. Kneeing to the end.
To the end! Damn, he's tall.
And yep, that's Michael Palin standing on a ladder. The same.
Do you think the Swede who did the antler sharpening also tended to his helmet?
I should think so, you know. I think if I was a knight who said knee, I would have a horny helmet too.
I'm sure you would, John.
You know, it's kind of ironic because, you know, we have Michael Palin playing the head knight who plays knee. Sir Galahad couldn't get naughty with the girls at Castle Anthrax, and so here he is, still horny in the next scene.
Well, we've got the swords all over the film, too, so...
Yes, we've got plenty of phallic imagery in there, too. A shrubbery! I can't say the word shrubbery without thinking of this. Find you a shrubbery. Shrubbery! Or else you will never pass through this world alive! Knights of Knee, just and fair.
So many Monty Python references in the Quest for Glory games that I played. There's the line, one of the characters wants you to, you're supposed to bring him a plant, and he says, I want you to bring me a shrubbery. Oh, bollocks. Blotched.
And here we have the medieval monk illuminating the manuscript, and slight tremor caused by the weather. And it was perfect, too. We got it just right, and then building shakes, and the monastery shakes, and messes up his perfect penmanship. I've always wanted to learn how to illuminate a manuscript. I've always wanted to do that. I've always admired that, the monks that did that, and the craftsmanship and artistry that went into it. And if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't have any of these. A lot of these books, a lot of these classic manuscripts.
Modern might be a little. You might even be able to do some modern influence of graffiti to make a modern illuminated manuscript.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, I know that Carl Gustav Jung illustrated a book like that called The Red Book. What the curtains? Not the curtains, lad.
This is the same castle, right?
Yes, this is Dune Castle. It's inside. This is the
Exterior shot earlier, too?
Yes, this is the scene where Michael Palin is talking to his son, played by Terry Jones. And this is the wedding of Prince Herbert and Princess Lucky. He's marrying a girl who has huge tracts of land. One of my favorite lines in the film. And this room that they are in, that is serving as his bedroom, this was the bathing chamber in Castle Anthrax. The room has been cut in half by hanging a tapestry on a clothesline to make it look like it's a little bedchamber.
And so they're getting a lot of mileage out of this one location then, yeah?
Yeah, there's an old saying, if it ain't in the frame, it doesn't exist. And if you just don't show something in the frame, it may as well not be there. Because that's all the audience sees, and so if you just shoot in close-ups, like in two shots like they're doing now, and mediums, it gives the illusion that this is a very small room, instead of a massive dining hall. This is also where the Camelot dance sequence is held.
Oh, really?
Don't like it.
Here it is.
It's huge tracts of land.
Like the euphemism for voluptuous breasts, huge tracts of land.
It's not tits.
I want to sing. Marianne Princess Lucky.
Used to it.
Yeah.
Guards. Make sure the prince doesn't leave this room. Not to leave the room, even if they come and get him. Well, no, until I come and get him. Until you come and get him, we're not to enter the room.
Stay here, so he doesn't leave.
Now, what's really funny about this is the alcove that you see that's serving as a bookshelf there. That's just where the knights were standing singing in the Camelot musical sequence.
If it's not in the frame, it don't exist.
Exactly. And this had actually a stone floor, and they scattered straw on it to make it look a bit more cozy.
It also looks really cozy with the wedding bunting on their pikes and on their armor.
Yeah. I think I want if I ever get married, I think I want the ushers to dress like that at my wedding, you know? I got to wear a fucked up cummerbund that was cranberry colored, whatever the hell that is, and wear a tuxedo, and I'd rather wear knight's armor, actually.
No, that's not a... I don't know what pole arms they're carrying. The one on halberds? Maybe, kind of. Different kind of... Because the guy in frame right looks like could be a halberd. I don't think it's a bardici either.
I think it's a halberd based upon the shape of the blade. And those would be... They look like they're actual reproduction halberds. They don't look like they're cardboard props. They look pretty good, actually.
Yeah. Well, you know, they might not be able to get carbon steel ones, but nothing wrong with reproduction, especially because if they're not using them to do any combat with.
Right. They're just set dressing, and we almost get a musical number here. Oh, go and get the glass of water. And here we have another famous line of this film is coming up. And for those of you that have seen this film many times, and I'm sure most of you have, you'll know what I'm talking about. Those of you that have not seen this film before, why are you listening to this cast? Go and watch the film first, you know? Then listen to me talk about it. Listen to us talk about it. And we see Prince Herbert writing the message very, very quickly.
And tying it to the arrow, all surreptitious, while his guards watch his every move.
And he's looking right at them, too. He's looking at them the whole time. The awkward smile.
And he shoots the arrow out the window.
And here it comes. Message for you, sir.
How many people have that wave as their text message?
As their email, too. I used to have it for my email. Now it's...
I once saw online the wave file and it with the of that bit of dialogue and saying that yeah, great for message receipt.
Now what's interesting about this scene is that there's a few different takes were made of the scene. There was a perfect take that was made when Terry Jones was offset and Terry Gilliam was shooting. And Gilliam made them reshoot the sequence because he felt that there wasn't enough fog in the sequence. Terry Jones came back to the set, wanted to kill Terry Gilliam, and reshot the scene. And this is the scene, one take, that you see right here. And both John Cleese and Eric Idle wanted to throttle Terry Gilliam because of the high number of takes for this one sequence that was really simple to film, and they got their dialogue right the first time. It was just a matter of not enough fog.
More fog! More cowbell! More fog!
I love Terry Gilliam. He's one of my favorite directors, but he is eccentric that way, where he just gets over the top and his ideas get too big for his britches and winds up costing him a lot more money than it should.
And there's Princess... What's her name again?
Lucky.
Lucky, yes.
There's Princess Lucky. And... some old friar here.
Love that tonsure.
Great tonsure, yeah. And then, see, the music is... is that the theme of the film?
No, it's Sir Robin.
Oh, okay, there we go. I knew it was familiar.
Now, the funny thing about this is, Oh, there we go, there are the banners, H and L, Herbert and Lucky. I was going to say, Hair by Augustine for the tonsure. If you see a manuscript illuminations of Augustine, his hair is like that. And here's John Cleese running to the castle, and it's the same piece of footage, just looped over and over again, of him running towards the castle.
I noticed that. It was, I thought it was... went on awfully long.
It's the build tension, you know. And I guess we see that there are roses on their helmets, on the helmets of the pikemen.
With their halberds, or their bardichis.
And, oh yeah, this is great. It's this long tension. And then, like lightning, he just comes in and slashes them.
Hey!
And here it is, just a rampage. Just a madcap slaughter of random wedding guests, killing bridesmaids. Lots of Kensington gore. Lots and lots of Kensington gore. Ooh! Knocks down the minstrel's podium. Or minstrel's platform. Yeah, kills another guard. There we go. Kills the jug bearers. Oh, God, you don't want to kill the booze guys, man. You just killed the bartender.
The bunghole could get knocked out like that.
Kicked Princess Lucky right in the tits. Killed one of the stewards here.
Kill, kill, run up the stairs. Oh, and just smash the innocuous flowers in the torch sconce.
Oh yeah, you know, he's on a rampage. He's going berserker here, man. You know, he's doing everything but foaming at the mouth. And guard number one dead. Guard number two dead. Don't tell me what I can and can't do. Fuck you.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry.
Well, I got a note. I thought your son was a lady.
I knew someone. Somewhere out there. Someone.
Somewhere.
Stop that. Stop it. Stop it. Who are you?
He's come to rescue me, Father.
Did you kill all those guards? Oh, yes. Sorry. Oh, £50 each.
So that was the only thing that... that was the thing that could reliably get his father's attention starting at the beginning of a musical number.
And here we have Jones, Prince Herbert, tying the sheets, the sheet rope. You know, once inmates escaped from the Allegheny County Jail actually doing that. So it's not a myth. You can actually do it.
Truth in television.
Yep. From Camelot. I'm ready. Then we have... we have Jones hanging out the window.
Wonder if he's got a scaffold there. Oh, yeah.
If I remember correctly, he fell into a mat or a net of some kind. I would have to check, but I believe it was a net.
Carnage.
Yep, and here we see the bloody remains of the wedding party.
my bloody medieval wedding. Oh, here we go again.
My big, fat, bloody medieval wedding. And the music is playing again. There's more carnage. More people are getting killed. And father-in-law's breaking it up.
I wonder if this this makes it difficult to invite John Cleese to weddings.
Well, he's been married 3 times, actually, so I imagine getting married for John Cleese is pretty violent. I love the guy, but yeah, if I were a woman, I would not marry him.
He killed my auntie!
This is supposed to be a happy occasion. Let's not bicker and argue about who killed who. Another famous one-liner.
Matrimony. Fortunately, one of them, my son Herbert,
has just fallen to his death. There's Princess Lucky with the blood coming out of her mouth. Yes, laugh at the bloody mouth.
Wonder what the Kensington gourd tastes like.
I have got to find out what it's made out of. I know that stage blood is usually Karo syrup and food coloring. I would think that it would be made out of that as well, but it's a bit thicker than that. Yeah, that's a good question. I think it would be really, really sweet.
Another motif of the film. Someone's getting better, and then get him. Get rid of him.
And they don't even try to hide it. You just see the guard walk up with a dagger and just jam him, you know? They don't even hide the fact that he's just being assassinated right in front of everybody. Klee's just nonchalant. Until, what? You want me to marry Princess Lucky?
Oh, it's Herbert. Not quite dead. Not much better.
Sir, there we have Concord, the squire.
Well, I'll tell you.
Not like that.
Dun, dun. He's going to tell. No, it's not right for my idiom. Must accept more.
Oh, John Cleese, you get the Errol Flynn moment. Good for you. Okay, sort of the Errol Flynn moment. Pump your legs, John. Pump your legs.
Could somebody give me a push? It's because of this movie that I know what idiom means. I was introduced to it at that age. Oh, we got more violence against pussy. I mean cats. We got a cat getting slammed against a rug being used as a rug beater. There's a reason for this, and Graham Chapman revealed it in his college lecture tours. John Cleese is a cat fancier, but he did some unorthodox things to his cats. He had their vocal cords removed so they couldn't meow. And he had them declawed, which is considered cruel. It can cripple a cat if you declaw it, and you leave him defenseless. And it was considered cruel snipping their cords. And Graham Chapman, who was a big-time animal lover, was quite pissed at Cleese for doing this. And so he would include scenes like this in the film to, like, get a message to him, like, hey, you know, stop doing this to your kitties. Be nice to your pussy.
Hug your pussy.
Love your pussy.
Nee. Nee. Knee.
New.
It's knee. It's knee. New.
No, you're not doing it properly. The back of the throat.
You've got it. Knee. 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 Yes.
As we notice, Roger the Shrubber does not have a horse-drawn carriage. He has a slave-drawn carriage. He has two men drawing his carriage.
Well, use what you can get. Does this make him the first rickshaw owner? No, probably not.
You know what? I just realized this, that there is more kink to this film than I'd previously thought. We have kink in Castle Anthrax, and now we have Roger the Shrubber has a dom and his two subs drawing his card.
Oh, God. Pony play for from the Shrubber.
Pony Shrubber. And now we have a little picket fence, and we have the shrubs. No longer the knights who say nee. Now the knights who say whoop.
I've never learned what that's supposed to be.
Icky zit bang whoop nipong. Yeah. I used to remember the whole thing, too. I think I just blew it. Gotta find another shrubbery.
Gotta go back to the nursery.
Yep. Slightly higher, so you get a two-level effect. So, they're not just the knights who say knee, they're garden landscapers, too. We found the shrubberies. We must cut down the mightiest tree in the forest with...
I thought so.
A herring. Palin's got a herring. Cut down a tree with a herring.
Better homes and groves.
Better homes and haunted forests. It. It's. It. 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 Ooh, you wouldn't get very far in life not saying is.
No, you wouldn't.
Okay, sorry about that, folks. We had a minor technical difficulty there. And my computer is being
we're back,
a
ladies
dick.
And gentlemen.
Yes, but we are being back. And now we have to go do a scene selection, so if any of you need to go use the restroom, now would have been the time to do it.
Look, y'all, take a slash if you need to, right?
Yep, spend a penny, as they say. Because
how did I manage to do that? I said y'all and made a Britishism at the same time.
The actress Jennifer Ely, her dad is John Ely, a novelist from West Virginia, who's famous for writing Journey of August King and Winter People. Her mom is Rosemary Harris, who played Aunt May in Spider-Man films.
Yeah.
And she said that as a child, she used to talk with half a British accent, half an American accent. It's funny, she used to say, "Mama, I'm gonna go wash my hair in the shower." Like that.
I guess it's something Claudia Black said about being Erin soon, because she's, I think she's from England and Australia at the same time. And
yeah.
Then the oddities of her dialect became kind of standard for the Sabaeans and the humans and hell, all the English spoken in Farscape.
Yeah. And here we are. We are back with a herring. Closer with your mic. But we're going to restart. We're going to pick up at the scene where the knights who say knee have told Arthur to go cut down a tree with a herring.
Knee! And to say, it is a pain.
You know, that was probably a moment of total improv. And it's now become rote for all the other geeks out there.
Right, exactly. I'm willing to bet that that is correct. Just find another shrubbery.
I got something that is often noticed about Python, that so much of their stuff comes from improv and becomes rote.
Actually, the majority of their stuff was scripted. They rarely ever improvised. Graham Chapman revealed that in his college lecture tours. They would rarely ever improv. And they would usually, everything was always scripted, always rehearsed. They would improv off of each other in interviews.
Right.
And the knight with the chicken that would whack people over the head, that was always improvised. And the colonel, when Chapman would wear the officer's uniform, the colonel, the British colonel's uniform, and he'd interrupt people, that was improvised.
Oh, I don't remember him. It's been a while since I've seen any flying circus, I guess.
Yeah. Wouldn't get very far in life not saying is.
Okay, that reminds me now. I was playing party in improv once, and somehow I got the part of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, unless it was Beethoven, who fainted at the sound of the word it.
It.
Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to play party and drop the clues as to, you know, that I'm Beethoven, and then falling down every time it comes up. As I recall, one of the other improvisers was kleptomaniacal Reverend Jesse Jackson.
Reverend Jesse Jackson. Oh, good.
So when I took a feint, he robbed my wallet.
And we've just had Sir Robin make his reappearance into the film, and Julian's singing the coward song, basically. And we've just seen the sheet put over the dead historian, and the bobbies are investigating the murder. And we see foreshadowing with the Thousand-Eyed Black Beast.
Mm-hmm.
And some animation they've just found Sir Galahad here.
Mm-hmm.
Poor Galahad, I'm sure he's rejoicing.
We've got Old Man Winter here.
Uh-huh.
And the sun getting blown away.
Blown away by snow.
Yep. Frozen land of Nador. And there was much rejoicing.
There was much rejoicing.
After eating Sir Robin's minstrels. Once ate a minstrel.
If he's buggering those goats.
I once ate a minstrel some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Spring and summer are mist straight into autumn. I like autumn. It's my favorite season. Mm-hmm. So,
I like the summer and the spring myself.
I could handle it going straight into autumn. Mm-hmm. And now, this scene here, I believe, was shot in a rock quarry in Wales.
Looks like a quarry, yeah.
Yeah, and this is the Tim the Enchanted sequence.
Uh-huh.
Why they didn't call him Merlin, I don't know, but they call him Tim the Enchanted.
Probably because to avoid calling him, they didn't want to call him Merlin.
Yeah. Merlin sounds too majestic, too serious.
Yeah.
You can't ridicule him if he's just Merlin.
Yeah, it's Python. Yeah.
Although in the Merlin TV series, it was pretty awful. Sam Neill was great, but just bad script.
Jim the Enchanted is having entirely too much fun with his pyrotechnics.
Oh, yeah. Lots of pyro. I have fun with pyrotechnics, you know.
Oh, yeah.
If I could do that at will, I would do it.
Fireworks.
Fire!
Just no one quote Tolkien here about his fireworks and golden showers. I guess no, it was silver showers.
And that was just perfect right there. It really looked like he had teleported.
Uh-huh.
Just perfect placement of those flash pods. Enchanted. You call me Tim King Arthur. Well, yeah, you're the King of England. I think he would.
Flamethrower staff.
Yeah, my favorite horror movie weapon, the flamethrower. Chainsaw comes in second, then boomstick.
I'll take the pump-action shotgun.
I just want the chainsaw because I want to get in there and get all gory. Mm-hmm. Got a little bit of missile launcher there.
Mm-hmm. Find the Holy Grail.
Yep.
Gotta love those horns on Tim.
I want a horny hat like that.
You might try hanging around some of the Hell's Angels.
Well, Warlock's got horns he wears all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Looks cool on him, too.
Mm-hmm.
With a name like Warlock, I think it's a prerequisite he has to wear them.
Oh, aye, of course.
Ooh,
hot foot.
Yep.
Shield of Chastity won't help you much against the pyrotechnics.
Nope.
Use your words, Your Majesty.
Anytime I see an object that resembles the Holy Grail, I do that bit. I say, I'm looking for a grail! No matter what it is, whether it's wine glasses or a candle holder, I have to do.
Gratuitous fireworks.
Is it ever really gratuitous? Can you have too much pyro?
I have two words for you. Michael Bay.
No, but his pyro's fake. This is real. This is CG. This is real stuff. Getting
no, he likes his real pyro. Mm. He knows that the CG doesn't cut it.
Rammstein made a whole career out of pyro. their stage shows and their songs.
Uh-huh.
He's telling them about the cave of Khair Banog. Foreshadowing with the evil bunny.
So foul,
so cruel. No man yet has lived with it and lived.
Bones
thrown about.
Look at him spray. Actor spit is sacred.
John Cleese's spit, yes. A few years ago, he had portions of his colon removed, and he auctioned off the bits on eBay.
Oh, good Lord.
And he said, I'm going to give the money to a nice doctor.
John, what?
If I had the money, I would have bought bits of his colon. I'm serious. And we got some skull there. And hey, I would have bought
all, that. All that it was lacking was a tread crushing it.
Yeah, Terminator.
Mm-hmm. Nee, I'm looking for Sarah Connor. Nee.
Hey, we have the cave of Kyra Banok.
Mm-hmm. More frog, more cowbell.
Yep. Not yet. No. No frog in this.
There's fog.
Oh, you sure said fog. Is. I thought you said frog. I thought you were talking about the French people.
Oh.
Goodbye, French listeners. Goodbye. Goodbye, listeners from Quebec as well. Is it the rabbit? Is it hiding behind the rabbit? It looks like Benicula, the vampire bunny.
Oh, I read a couple of those books, actually.
I love those.
The,
Sod.
Quest for Glory 4 has the Vorpal Rabbit is a monster. This is the one that said in Mordavia that I was telling you about. Killer rabbit.
Sold my armor, I was so scared. It's just 3 miles wide. Now, in some of the scenes, the close-ups where it's on the shield, that's a hand puppet.
Uh-huh.
It's a bunny hand puppet. These scenes right here, it's a real bunny. And in the Holy Grail video game,
uh-huh,
you have 5 holy hand grenades, 5 chances to kill it. And you have to exterminate with extreme prejudice and blow its ass to kingdom come.
And the holy hand grenade was my favorite. There we go.
Kensington Gore, arterial spray and decapitation.
Yep. Vorpal Rabbit. Yeah, my favorite weapon my ultimate weapon that I would always choose for my worm team in Worms Armageddon was the holy hand grenade.
I remember that game.
Yeah,
the worm.
You would throw it. Free it sparkles, lands. Hallelujah. Bam!
And then we have the killer rabbit doing basically just taking them all out, man. Uh-huh. He's going on a rampage.
He was doing the bat bit from horror films earlier with flying back and forth.
Oh yeah, yeah. This is the Christopher Lee of bunnies. He is kicking ass.
Oh yeah, that rabbit is upset with the tomato juice.
Yeah. Now the owner wasn't too thrilled either, according to Terry Jones.
Probably stained his coat for a while.
Yeah.
Go change your armor.
They come so cross, they'll make a mistake. Like what? Well, can't think of any. This reminds me so much of my therapist had a little bunny hand puppet in her office, and I used to play with it and pretend it was biting my head. She would go, run away.
Nope, bring up the holy hand grenade.
Holy hand grenade. Oh, no. Same Latin chant again. Same music, cheap movie.
Except with the castrati singing the melody.
And oddly enough, that is the orb that is the regalia, the royal regalia. When the queen is coronated.
No shit,
she
they got it.
She holds that in her hand. Yep.
Oh, okay. I thought that they'd got a Chambord bottle.
Anytime I see a Chambord bottle, I think holy hand grenade.
Of course, me too. Yeah.
But, that is the royal regalia that Arthur is actually holding there.
Wow.
Yeah, whenever
the queen
is coronated, she holds a scepter to show power.
Mm-hmm.
And then the cross over the globe to show Christ's dominion over the earth and Britain's dominion as well. Orangutan. Always makes me hungry for cereal anytime I hear him say that. The breakfast cereals. Makes me want to eat some holy O's, you know. Holy Grail O's. 3 should be the number that I shall count these two.
The counting shall be 3.
3.
The what?
Count.
Neither shall we do.
5.
5 is right out. Then lobbest thou the holy hand grenade toward the end of the devils, the way
be not in thy sight
shall snuff it.
Amen. The funny part is the Old Testament, board. Deuteronomy, you see instructions like that.
Oh, right.
Not regarding weapons, but...
Uh-huh. Kaboom!
Yep, that rabbit is blown to hell and the bobbies have heard it.
Uh-huh.
They just found the shrubberies. But the knights who say ni are long gone.
Yeah, that's just as well for the bobbies.
Yeah. It would have been difficult interrogating them.
Yeah.
What did you say your name was? The knights who say ikitikitikizapangwoopniapong.
I give them 3 minutes before they pull out their billy clubs and brutalize the knights.
Yeah, and they would be asking for it too.
Oh, I.
You know, if you tase a guy wearing armor, it's going to be 100 times worse.
Think it would?
No, I think the armor would act as a conductor. Aramaic. And I only know that from watching Indiana Jones, actually.
I haven't even seen The Passion of the Christ, but...
I have.
Aramaic was, yeah.
Yeah, Christ speaks in Aramaic.
Uh-huh. I don't have no idea if that's actually Aramaic script, though.
Probably not. more famous lines. Just dying would want to come. Just say it. Just come on. Front, I think. Oh, yes.
Ooh!
Ah, the back of the throat. This is another scene I refer to a lot.
Uh-huh.
Ah!
Ah! Python animation for the win.
Run away!
The T-Rex knows to eat the lawyer first, and the beast knows to eat the priest first.
It's an unholy beast,
uh-huh.
Sent straight from hell.
You know, this critter deserved a cameo in Where the Wild Things Are.
Actually, it does. It does look like a Maurice Sendak creature, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Very Sendakian. Suffered a fatal heart attack. Ugh! Terry Gilliam biting the dust. I just love that. A personal tragedy works in the favor of King Arthur.
I wonder if that ever helped Bugs Bunny out of a jam.
Don't know. And now, the interesting part about this scene, well, there are many interesting things about it. This was the first scene that they shot.
Oh, really?
On the first day. And the camera they were shooting with, the gears had sheared. And so they had to go and get spare parts, and so they had to use the without sound,
uh-huh.
or without sound camera.
Right.
And shot the scene without sound and dubbed the
and
dialogue
dubbed
later
this?
On. Now, as you can see, Chapman, as King Arthur, is hugging the side of that cliff wall. The other pythons are not.
Uh-huh.
The reason being that Chapman was an alcoholic, and he was going through withdrawal at the time. He was going through delirium tremens.
Uh-huh.
So he was hallucinating when they were doing the scene.
Oof.
He was quite ill, and... he had to muster up a lot of balls to do this.
Mm-hmm. Wonder what kind of cliff they was actually having to deal with there.
It was a 100-foot drop.
Yeah.
It was actually pretty bad.
How the hell did they get the camera out there then? Scaffold?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, right here, they're just getting to the cliff.
Right. Oh, right, the one where the bridge is.
Yeah,
okay,
where the bridge is. Yeah, it's a 100-foot drop. Pardon me. Yeah. Right there, it's a 100-foot drop where that bridge is.
Yep.
And the, oh, you'll explain it in a moment, because this is just perfect.
The very first Quest for Glory game homage this. The gargoyle who guarded the front gate of this wizard's tower you could go and visit.
Yeah.
Asked you three questions.
There's an episode of Tiny Toons where they homage this too. Where a troll asks
that one,
Buster
yeah.
Bunny three questions. And then he has to slay a dragon that talks like Woody Allen. That's easy! Galahad goes across, knocks Lancel Buster. Approaches the bridge of death. At the other side, he sees. Witchkeeper, I'm not afraid.
Yes, you are.
Favor. It's Robin of Camelot. What is your quest? To seek the Holy Grail? What? The capital of Assyria. Nineveh. Nineveh is the capital of Assyria.
Vroom. Bye-bye, Sir Robin. We hardly knew you.
Yep. I would hate to be the guy who would have to go down there and pick up that knife.
Maybe they put it on a bungee cord.
Nope. It's your favorite color. Blue.
Bye-bye, Galahad.
Now we'll get to some more trivia about this bridge. After this dialogue is finished. It'll freak you out. Otto, King of the Britons. Is your quest. Seek the Holy Grail. Clever answer, Arthur.
Yep. Another mannequin. Or was it the same mannequin?
Same mannequin. Now that bridge, Terry Jones walked across it the whole way to prove it was safe to walk across.
Uh-huh.
The pins that were holding that bridge into the cliffside, they're only a half inch into the cliffside. Jones didn't know that until years later. And he said, if I had known that, I would never have walked across it.
Yeah.
I would never have encouraged anybody else to
half
do
it. Inch depth? Hell no.
Yeah. Michael Palin on the bonus feature says, props to you, man. You had the guts to walk across that bridge.
Yeah.
I didn't.
A little psychedelic intermission there.
Yep.
Now passed.
And we're on the other side.
All right, thank God. Mr. Knight, oh.
Getting shaken down by the man.
Uh-huh.
And now, so, weren't they on the other side of the bridge?
If it was matched right, yes.
Yeah.
Depending on, you know, if, how well you respect the line of shooting.
Yeah.
Because it can still be the same side, it just looks different depending on if you've crossed the line.
Yeah, from a different angle.
Of course, that whole concept diagram is better than it explains vocally. More fog, more cowbell.
Here we are, a windy day in Scotland. And as Chapman said, chain mail just whistles straight through. He was wearing actual chain mail. And, yeah, he was quite cold and miserable.
That's what the surcoat's supposed to help with.
Yep. The very thin cotton surcoat.
Well, you wear the underpadding, then.
And here we've got a Viking boat.
In the middle of... Oh, well, no. Okay, there's water, I was going to say. What is it? Is it a landship sailing on Scotland's moors?
Well, maybe it could, you know. It ain't exactly water. It ain't exactly earth. It ain't exactly quicksand. It's the moors. And that is impressive.
Uh-huh.
And that is an actual working boat, but it was being pulled by a winch that was land-based.
Damn it, they just can't get a strapping enough winch to do the job.
You know, Faith can move mountains. She's a big girl.
Uh-huh.
And there we are. And guess what castle that is?
Fuck off, really?
Yeah, it's the same castle. Shot from a different angle.
Holy shit, they did get a lot of mileage out of it because I didn't see a lake in any of the previous shots, or a loch, I should say.
A loch.
Aye, nope. A loch.
It's the same castle.
What did they do, mats then, to block out the water in some of the earlier ones?
Possibly. Well, the other ones were pretty close.
Yeah.
So it's hard to tell.
course, then the... Of course, the... Whoa, hello. No sheep.
Yeah, it's just another silent castle.
Yep. Profane it with French filth, right?
Goodbye, French listeners. It was nice knowing you. I think you're capital. I think you're wonderful people.
What other livestock do they have?
Oh, they've got something worse than livestock. And in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1...
Let me in, dammit. English bedwetting types. Tiny brain wipers of other people's bottoms. Oh, there we go.
Yep. Chamber pot.
Yeah.
Yep. Now, earlier he was the only guy who hadn't gotten shit on him.
There we go.
Yeah. And now... Make castanets out of your testicles. They had to cut that line for the American release just to get this PG rating.
What did they use for the contents of the chamber pot? Do I want to know?
Just mud.
Okay.
Just mud, yeah. It was mud mixed with a little bit of algae.
I see.
And some of that seaweed.
Algae makes a difference, yeah.
Yeah.
And then they wade across. I guess Faith wasn't pulling the boat the other way.
Oh, the boat's gone now, see? Boat's not in the shot. And now, the army they assembled was actually only about 60 people. Mm-hmm. But they had them all carrying banners and flags. Uh-huh. Made it look like there were 600.
Yeah. Get on with it! All with coconut. Coconut people.
They had teenagers from the village.
I'm having a flashback to Bed Knobs and Broomsticks.
Years since I've seen that.
Uh-huh. I used to watch that one pretty regularly. We had it on VHS.
I used to watch Condor Man pretty regularly. That's an obscure Disney movie.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember seeing it.
Michael Crawford, it's a superhero spoof. Mm-hmm. Maybe on DVD, it may be hard to get.
Uh-huh.
So they're sharpening their pikes. Getting their armor on.
Uh-huh.
And we got a bunch of teenagers from the village holding spears.
Uh-huh.
Wearing rudimentary armor and just circa.
Kind of sounds pretty historically accurate.
Yeah. There's a bonus feature in here where the children of some of the extras reenact the scene.
Nice. Shall be avenged. It's a pretty emotionally... charged scene. You know, it's a little reminiscent of Braveheart.
Yeah. It was long before Braveheart.
Yeah.
I'm thinking Henry V, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, this is Shakespearean almost.
Yeah.
This is the Battle of St. Crispin's Day right here.
Yeah.
And they're charging.
Charging. Yeah. Let's get some frog legs.
Yep.
Someone fell. I saw that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I guess, well, when someone fell in, there comes the Bobbies.
Yep. In an extreme anti-climax, Bobby's come,
yeah.
Paddy wagon.
What was I going to say? Oh, yeah, I guess when someone fell off a horse in the charge on Pelennor Fields in Return of the King, all the horses just dodged around them. Oh. These actors might not be that as dexterous, so who knows if the guy who fell got trodden on.
And the cop with the megaphone right there is Julian Doyle, the production designer. Now,
do we come back to the dentist story?
Nope.
Can't remember.
Now, when I first saw this film, I was 12 years old, and I was a bit disappointed that they didn't actually storm the castle and kick everybody's ass.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Get the grail, excuse me, or the girl, both. The holy girl? Whoa, dude, even better. No.
We get to the Flower of Nun?
Yep.
A Vestal Virgin?
Yeah. However,
right.
I will say this, though. Years later, I realized something. That the Grail is mythical. And that's why they don't find it at the end of the film, because it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And so all Grail quests kind of... The idea of questing for the Grail is getting, trying to get something that is impossible to attain, near impossible.
Yeah. And hey, it's a Python thing anyway, to play with the expectations.
Yeah. Now, Terry Jones revealed that this organ solo here that's going on, this was meant to continue to play, and people were not meant to realize the film had ended. They're meant to think that the film had broken, and that this offertory was being played, you know, like as a time filler, while reels were being changed. And this was to continue to play long after the curtains had opened, and the house lights had turned on. When I saw him at the Castro Theater, they did exactly that. And he said, that is the first and only time I've ever seen it done correctly. The projectionist did it right, you know, thank you. And a guy in the audience had a question for Jones, and he said, yes, he said, I saw this in Grand Rapids, Michigan, ages ago, and yeah, they did it back then.
We just gotta wonder when the end credits are gonna come.
Yep.
Wait for it.
Wait for it.
Wait for it.
I'm trying to remember.
See a fjord while you wait.
Yes. Yes, there are lots of mooses that you can go and find. My brother Sven would help you.
You can buy the moose repellent, would you?
Yes, you can. And Olga will help you as well. And Ursula, she's very good with the mooses. She is a moose masseuse. Certified moose masseuse.
CSMM.
Certified moose.
Certified Swedish. Moose. which is a bad word.
Yeah.
Masseuse, yeah.
Masseuse, yeah. It's no longer used. It's
Well, no, I still hear it. It's doubly wrong when used in reference to me because I'm male, so I would be a masseur and a massage therapist.
Gotcha.
Masseuse means to rub. One who rubs.
One who rubs.
Yeah, that's the etymology of the word.
Said rub.
Which is exactly
that's why you say CMD instead. So that is Monty Python and the Holy Grail. And that is all 90 minutes of it, plus the time when the computer completely fucked up. But that's neither here nor there. So, in retrospect, because it's been a while since you've seen the Holy Grail, I've seen it many, many times. What are your impressions of it on this review?
I noticed some stuff that I hadn't before. Well, for one thing, you told me the little Easter egg with the bowls of Granny Smith apples, things like that. You know, little details come out to you now, and you have a new source of information. And the title animation is a new thing too, which I hadn't seen before. I don't think the last time I saw it, I don't think it was this edition of the DVD release.
It's been I've seen this so many times, so many times over the years, and I've seen the Flying Circus so many times that I had to wait many, many years before revisiting Monty Python. Even though I'm a huge Python fan, and like all Python fans, you memorize the dialogue if you're a Python fan. You memorize every scene from every episode of the TV show and every movie, and it gets to the point where it becomes boring somewhat because we're overly familiar with the material.
Give it time to review.
Yeah.
Before you can revisit.
That's the thing about things like this, about movies that become pop culture staples and that we've seen so many times over and over again. You just gotta sometimes let them breathe a little bit.
I might have had enough distance from it now to watch the entirety of the Dragon again.
Yeah, it's funny because I just know that the next generation is going to discover this. You know, if my nieces and nephews have not discovered it, they will. One of my cousins discovered it, and he was completely jazzed that I knew all the dialogue. And he and I ran lines together doing this. And I imagine that, you know, if I ever have kids, they'll pull this DVD out of my collection, put it on, watch it for the first time ever, and laugh so hard that they won't be able to breathe.
That's the same thing with Princess Bride.
Princess Bride will be around forever. That's a classic film. It became a classic in a short period of time. And
it will be forever.
Exactly forever, and deservedly so.
Deservedly, absolutely.
So that was the Holy Grail. Boys and ghouls, ladies and gentlemen, ladies and germs.
bit of a departure for the flypaper dungeon. I hope you enjoyed it. I certainly had fun analyzing and picking this movie apart, as I have done many times by myself, but now I have a victim. I mean, a friend with me, and all of you people as well. And the next...
It's Johnny Zombie, the Python Slasher.
Does that mean I slash people with a python? Do I have a slash on them? Do I have a slash on them?
That's kind of, that would be kind of a nifty weapon, a bladed python. Kind of like the Prince of Persia's dagger tail.
Maybe. Jake the Snake Ripper.
Jake the Snake and his spiked chain.
And so, the next audio commentary we'll be doing is Sir Peter Jackson's magnum opus. Do you know what the name of that movie is?
You're saying that his first film, Bad Taste, is his magnum opus?
One of my favorite Peter Jackson films. Bad Taste.
I haven't seen it yet.
You will see it. You will enjoy it. Mm-hmm. You will be grossed out by it. You will see Peter, Sir Peter Jackson, recently knighted, fighting himself on camera. Has both an alien that eats people and a New Zealand gun-toting alien investigator.
For some reason. I thought of my first fight with Tyler.
Exactly. So, good night, ladies and germs, and we will see you soon on the Flypaper Dungeon.
Good night.
And there you have it, the Holy Grail audio commentary. I hope you've all enjoyed this departure as much as I have. And as always, address your comments at flypapermemory@gmail.com. Though the title of the podcast is Flypaper Dungeon, it's a long story. And you can visit me on the web at flypaperdungeon.blogspot.com. And you can give us feedback there, send us some email. Reach out and touch me, please. I'm very, very lonely. So reach out and touch us on flypaperdungeon.blogspot.com. And we will see you next week. So until then, good night. I'm your host, Johnny Zombie.